You're listening to Synesthesia. It's produced live in the studio at Trent Radio 92.7 CFFF FM in beautiful Nagajiwinang, Peterborough, Ontario, every Thursday at 5 p.m. It's also a podcast on Soundproof, creative nonfiction for audio. I'm your producer and host, L.A. Alfonso. In this audio program, film theory meets film music. I get to know myself better when I speak to strangers. Last night I dared myself to go to a singles meetup. I didn't drink any alcohol since I had to drive, and surprisingly it turned out I didn't need it. I was as talkative and confident as I could be, and I learned I don't need the extra help I usually give myself at these events. At the restaurant, I found myself at a table of strangers. I told the others at the table about going to a confidence workshop afterwards and finding out that I needed to work on mine. Someone I just met at the restaurant called Chris told me I had already seemed very confident. Well, that's because I'm working on it, I said. I'm pushing myself. Later, Mike said he'd check out my movie, 12. I had the opportunity to talk about finding the article in Children in Society. One of the organizers, Jackie, was very friendly and introduced me to as many as she could. We became friends. I had the famous London butter chicken dish, like she did, and I saved up my appetite all day for it. Eden said she did the same thing. I went over to talk to Alyssa, and she appreciated it. She told me that she also had a 20-year-old daughter, and moving to Montreal, and had just driven her to the train station herself just a few days ago. First-time meetings made for great second-time greetings. I just made that up. I'm impressed with myself. One may be awkward and shy, but the next meeting will be much easier if they try. I felt stuck at a table, talking. Sue, a stout, gray-haired, little older lady from Oshawa, asked me if I wanted to mingle with her. I said, sure. After winning the door prize, she quickly left the restaurant with some guy. I learn about myself differently when I talk to strangers. Strangers force me to talk about myself from scratch. There is a similar line in my film 12 from 2009. Someone named Jackson was smoking his vape outside the venue when I arrived. I needed some help. He told me I was at the right place. I'm going to the singles meetup too, he said. He looked as nervous as I was. And he told me how to get there. I saw him sitting alone at one of the tables, so I just sat without asking. He told me that he loved my faux hawk haircut, and I appreciated him telling that, and I felt self-conscious in the car looking at my haircut in the rearview mirror. "Nah," he said, "looks like you rock it all the time." "Thanks, man, that means a lot. Can I buy you a drink?" "No, thanks, though. I gotta slow down," he said, pointing to his double scotch on the rocks. I didn't think to compliment him on his mustache, and I realized later when someone mentioned that his new facial hair that it looked good, she said. "I want to make new friends and meet like-minded people. I'm striving towards friendship and harmony. Can I bring my painting game to one of these events?" "That's an idea." I told Jackson what I did, and he said, "I wish I were better at media. There's so much to do." I asked, "What would you do if you could do anything?" And he said there were so many topics that he couldn't even begin to choose. "Well," I began, "it would have to be something only you can do." And I paused. "I know what that is." He looked at me from across the table and sipped his drink. "What would that be?" he asked. "Your own story," I said. "No one can tell your own story except you." "I like that," he said. The thought seemed to blow his mind. "This is what I want to teach," I said. "Again," he said, genuinely surprised, "I like that." Matt ate a Buddha bowl before me while I talked about doing my PhD in the Me Movie Director's Notebook feature film, and I gave him a card. I said, as part of my PhD research creation, I'm making a first-person film about first-person films. I even told him about meeting another filmmaker and how crestfallen I was to learn that someone else was doing the same thing. "Still," Matt said, "everybody's take is different." I said, "Thank you, but I had to go through the disappointment to get to where I am right now." Derek couldn't think of an example of a first-person documentary. He offered, like, Hearts of Darkness? "No," I said flatly, then added, "but I loved that movie. Had Eleanor Coppola directed the resulting documentary of her footage, it may qualify as a first-person film. Her diary was the basis of the film, so now that I think of it, it qualifies to be partly on my list, if only to mention its crossover with the subgenre and how brilliant the film truly is." I said, "What I mean is closer to Bo Burnham's Inside, which is not a documentary per se, but it's true to his experience, and he wrote, directed, and edited, and starred in it." And I reiterated my tired tagline, "The filmmaker as the film's protagonist." That is the title of my steadily growing Letterboxd list of films I've seen, want to see, or have heard about in this genre. Next time I pitch my project to a stranger, I could define my study in the way Efren Cuevas words it. Filmmakers who turn their cameras on their lives, which does not exclude the outside world, as he quotes Carlos Ruiz saying, "Autobiography is just a contextual level in which one can discuss many things. Time, memory, past and present, being man, being woman." Inspired by Cuevas' article, I can also describe my project as mapping out the autobiographical documentary in my work and life. You are listening to Synesthesia, which is produced live in studio at Trent Radio 92.7 CFFF FM in beautiful Nagajiwinong, Peterborough, Ontario, every Thursday at 5 p.m. And it's also a podcast on Soundproof, creative nonfiction for audio. I'm your producer and host, L.A. Alfonso. In this audio program, film theory meets film music. In the background, we've been listening to the work of Aquifer from Peterborough, Ontario, aka Jared Bremner. He's a Peterborough, Ontario-based electronic music producer and multi-talented musician. He started composing music with synthesizers in 1993 under the name Aquifer. Without confining himself to any particular style, he explores the deep melodic undercurrents of techno, dreamy, ambient soundscapes, and project-specific music for film, dance, and circus performances. This is Broked. That was Aquifer, a track called Broked. And for a complete list of everything I play on this show, just check the show notes on Soundproof. Last year for my special field exam submission, I started my research creation by initiating the project for my proposed video essay series. And after receiving the go-ahead to create a proof of concept, I submitted episode one of my series on first-person films with David Holtzman's Diary, 1967. I was calling the series Me Movie, The Filmmaker as the film's protagonist. And I met with my frequent music collaborator, local electronic music producer, Jared Bremner, and said, when I asked myself the question, if Me Movie was a symbol, what would it look like? And the image that came to my mind was the icon for a power button. There's an eye in the middle and a broken circle around it. So I asked him, would you be able to make an original computer startup sound for this project? Not unlike something Brian Eno or Suzanne Ciani would create. And he agreed to do it. And so I suggested we watch David Holtzman's Diary for inspiration. And having not seen it for a very long time, I generated a lot of ideas and 2 pages of notes. Jared dozed off, and the long black and white silent walking footage sequences induce kind of a sleepy hypnosis. At one point, Jared exclaimed, "What a jerk." On screen, David Holtzman is filming his nude girlfriend while she slept. As I was developing the idea of the series in my mind, I decided to bypass the audio incarnation and jump right into producing a video, since I had planned at the very least to prepare a PowerPoint presentation with each one. So instead of applying to Trent Radio, I decided to utilize the screenings at Sadler House as my accountability for the project. I will use the audio and video facilities there, Sadler House, and next I plan to create a video production schedule for the webcast. I asked myself, could I insert a video of myself inside David Holtzman's studio through a green screen for the video series? And then I started to realize I needed to form a crew. And it felt much better to me than the solitude of the radio DJ, like I am now, talking to you by myself inside the studio. I would be glad to have the opportunity to test drive my idea and hammer out the details of the dissertation proposal I have yet to submit. I'm proposing a deep dive into first-person films, launching from writer Eric Barnow's filmmaking categories made famous in his textbook documentary, in which he created a taxonomy of filmmakers according to their intent, but should have included first-person filmmakers. However, his types could just as easily be applied to autobiographical filmmakers and the different reasons for their impulse to self-inscribe. I will focus on a film, filmmaker, or style each week, screen a movie for the community, gather field notes, do further research and writing, and then produce a weekly podcast for Trent Radio and online. And the show will provide the impetus, accountability, and structure. Me Movie, The Filmmaker is the Film's Protagonist, a podcast series about first-person cinema. It's a personal history of autobiographical documentaries told through movies, my movies, and their influences. I am planning a 24 audio episodes, each 20 to 25 minutes in length, comprising my weekly writing output generated from the screenings and the research. And the culminating research and audio will become the source material for a feature-length documentary about first-person documentaries. So yeah, I wrote that a year ago. I guess I fancied myself as a sort of John Berger of my version of ways of seeing. But what I found out quickly was, even with the ease of today's technology, I couldn't keep a one-person production going. So I decided to keep the research and pivot to radio this year with Synesthesia, where I can experiment with my unpublished essays and media that are worth sharing and incorporating them into this accumulative output of 14 radio broadcast hours with the possibility of more. I will play for you now the episode one, my demo for this series. And in it, you'll hear the startup sound that Jared created.
This is the story. This is a fairy tale.
Spoiler alert. David Holtzman's diary is a work of fiction that successfully masquerades as an autobiographical documentary. If David Holtzman and his audience were taught lessons about the problems of film truth, then our contemporary media seem to be endlessly repeating these lessons and variations of them. In his book, Jim Lean offers a modern-day Cartesian aphorism. I film, therefore I am.
Bring your life into focus, that's right.
Hey, this is L.A. Alfonso. It's past 11 a.m. here in Peterborough. So to be coherent, I decided to start off by interviewing myself. Last night, I launched my PhD research creation by hosting a screening of David Holtzman's diary. And I learned that it's difficult to get people out at the event last minute. Having a classroom full of students committed to learning and engaging is necessary for a generative discussion. Georgia and Angel showed up. Angel took some video and we staged some photos of me reading from my ad hoc essay. The potluck idea may have to be scrapped and replaced with catering. A note saying refreshments provided will more likely get people out. I found a number of films I want to see at this year's Hot Docs Festival. There is an extraordinary amount of first-person films. I can simply browse through the catalog and look for a description that includes the words, a filmmaker, and I've likely hit one. A filmmaker who loves her unusual body in the blurb for Is There Anybody Out There? Veteran filmmaker captures his elderly mother's experience in I Lost My Mom. The filmmaker revisits childhood friends in Upstream. A diagnosis shared by the filmmaker and Angel applicant. The director returns to her youth in You Were My First Boyfriend. The filmmaker is engulfed in a world of Shakespeare and clutter in Much Ado About Dying. The filmmaker walked the stroll in The Stroll. The filmmaker's determination to find the lost African film in the cemetery of cinema. And this is just my cursory glance. In James Latham's essay on the film's lasting effects, he writes, David Holtzman's diary explicitly addresses the empowering opportunities opening up to individual filmmakers and warns of problems associated with this new power. Today, he says, media consumers have increasingly become media producers. But, he argues, the social benefits of this empowerment have been mixed. Latham breaks down the modes of documentary film practice that would become popularized and commodified by corporate media, including A, the home movie format, B, the video diary format, C, the observational direct cinema approach, and D, the making a movie format. Latham also notes that the film would resonate with more independent filmmakers, such as film and video aiding in personal self-discovery, and also provided a model for transcending conventional documentary representation with more eclectic rhetorical approaches, like in Jonathan Coet's Tarnation, combining such techniques, interactive cinema verite, and its more observational counterpart, direct cinema. Only in the closing credits does it become clear that this film is actually a work of fiction, starring L.M. Kit Carson, directed by Jim McBride, and written by both men. Latham notes that many spectators reported being tricked into believing the film's apparent documentary authenticity. But, he argues, McBride's film actually critiques these types of films on a number of levels. Of course, as Latham notes, illusions of objectivity and truth are shattered by the fact that at all stages of production, the documentary filmmaker makes numerous conscious and unconscious decisions that mediate the truth value of what finally appears on screen.
Likewise, the subjects of documentaries know they are being filmed and tend to behave accordingly.
What are you looking for, uranium? It's a nice time. You should put a rubber on there. You'd be right in business,
right? Latham's essay, published in the summer of 2007, is on point with today's trends. He writes, "It is perhaps no surprise that media consumers increasingly look to alternative news sources, such as late-night comedy programs, or become producers in the blogosphere."
I don't know, if you want to make a good movie, just write a script. I'm sure you can write a better script than that. But this is not a good one. Your life is not a very good script, but...
He says, if David's life was not a very good script in its lack of commercial appeal, then the lives of countless other people today are providing more effective fuel for the global entertainment machine. Entertainment that too often is both fascinating and degrading to watch. I want to take one of Holtzman's deadpan camera confessionals and edit it like one of today's TikTok live streams that fulfills the predicted, quote, invasion and commodification of private life, unquote. His breakup with girlfriend Penny precipitates his voyeuristic obsessions with his neighbor Sandra. His disturbing stalking behavior exhibited in scenes such as when he follows an anonymous woman out of the subway and into the streets, filming her in a subjective POV manner, which by the 80s would become a convention of horror films like Halloween. Other possible visual side-by-side comparisons include Bo Burnham's use of his mirror to show his camera in Inside, or the recent case, Arne Svensson's window-peeping images of his neighbors, Peter Mettler's televinetry from Gambling Gods and LSD, and street drive-by footage from My Way, TikTok Live, and Ross McElwee's drunken confessionals in Sherman's March. The other day, I suggested that we watch David Holtzman's diary for inspiration, and having not seen it for a very long time, I generated a lot of ideas and two pages of notes. Jared dozed off. The long sequences of black and white, silent walking footage induce a kind of sleepy hypnosis. At one point, Jared exclaimed, "What a jerk." On screen, David Holtzman is filming his nude girlfriend while she slept. While reading another book that got delivered yesterday, I had a sudden thought about how David Holtzman's diary also preceded Lonely Girl 15, the famous vlogger, video blogger, which pioneered vlogging and became known for calling into question the authenticity of web content. When users of an online forum began to question its authenticity and found proof that led to its being outed as a hoax in September 2006. When I first saw it as a film student, I loved David Holtzman's diary for the possibilities that it modeled for me. My professor told a class about the screening at Cannes Film Festival and the outrage and disappointment at several other film festivals. I wondered, what did the audience collectively celebrate exactly before withdrawing support after learning about the cheating? This obscure film from the late 60s felt like a personal dare for me as a student filmmaker in the 90s and to make the real thing without cheating. More than 30 years later, I find myself still answering that call. In the autobiographical film In America, Jim Lane writes, "Shortly after the release of David Holtzman's diary, the U.S. documentary scene shifted to actual modes of autobiography, inspired by the fictional prototype. Nonfiction filmmaking has undergone an aesthetic revolution over the past decade, which parallels a significant change in fiction filmmaking. In October 2020, a New Yorker piece, 62 Films That Shaped the Art of Documentary Filmmaking, writer Richard Brody says it's a shift toward personalization. The prominent expression and critical movement in that change is called mumblecore, which has exerted a wide-ranging influence through its luminaries, aesthetics, and ideas. Mumblecore's documentary counterpart is creative nonfiction, an idea rooted in the filmmaker's physical or virtual presence and the conspicuous display of the process." In How Documentaries Work, Jacob Bricca says, "An example of a documentary convention that has undergone a rapid evolution in meaning The use of the direct-to-camera interview, in which the interviewee looks squarely into the lens, has exploded lately, and it is fast becoming the dominant mode of interview address in docuseries. Whereas it was once a highly charged statement to have the subject look into the camera, full of bracing intimacy, it's now just one option among others, not much different from the choice to have them look off-screen at the interviewer. Audiences have become used to people looking directly at them via the first-person video diaries on reality television, the vlogs, and how-to videos on YouTube. The ubiquitous selfie, such that the intense testimonial-slash-confessional aura it once carried, has diminished. Jim Lane also notes a diary demonstrated the personal crisis plot. He says, unlike the earlier direct cinema plots, the personal crisis plot pertains to the documentarist himself. He says the autobiographical subject that emerges in these documentaries is constantly in the process of shaping and reshaping. The activity of making the documentary is part of the shaping process. It hinges on the success or failure of the autobiographical subject to secure a position in the world. As a result, resolutions or attempted resolutions can take on myriad forms, but occur most often in the emotional, personal, and psychological registers. I find it interesting that Lane caught the poster of Hitchcock's Suspicion in the background shot of David's studio as a reference to what he calls the ethical and political problems of male voyeurism, which he says is a Hitchcockian obsession. Yet he overlooked the direct ripoff from Rear Window when Holtzman calls his neighbor to interrupt the lovemaking that he was spying on. Hitchcock used a telephone as a similar plot device in Rear Window. David Holtzman's diary gave birth to many filmmaking trends. One can trace its DNA in countless movies. Acting as a bridge between direct cinema and the autobiographical documentary, McBride and Carson simultaneously critique the political and ethical dimensions of documentary, autobiography, and the promise of truth in these enterprises. Diary established conventions in terms of narrative structure and performance that were later developed by actual journal entry documentarists.
That was my work in progress for Me Movie Director's Notebook. I did that last year, so things have changed a bit. My list on a Letterboxd called The Filmmaker as the Film's Protagonist, a list of personal documentaries, first-person films, diary films, documentaries as film memoirs, and cinematic self-inscription, has so far about 121 films in it. And it starts with, chronologically, with the film The Great White Silence in 1922, The Private Life of a Cat from 1946 by Maya Deren and Alexander Hammond, Letter from Siberia by Chris Marker, Window Water Baby Moving from 1959 by Stan Brakhage, and David Holtzman's Diary from 1967. The Great White Silence, by the way, is by Herbert Ponting. And this list ends with Demon Box, Sam Weinstein, which was just screened at Reframe Film Festival this a couple months ago, Entities with Knowledge by Maxwell Mueller, Ken August Meyer's Angel Applicant, and Daniel by Daniel Northcott, all from 2023. So recent additions are discoveries from the past even that I didn't know about until recently, including The Watermelon Woman from 1996, Fellini, A Director's Notebook from 69, and Inter Vista, another Fellini film from 1987. I'm continually adding new films. There's one I recently added by Rick Minich and Matt Sweetwood called Forgetting Dad, and the upcoming My Dad's Tapes, made by filmmakers from the area, Curtis Watson and Rob Biscardis, which is so new it still needs an entry in Letterboxd. And more are being released and being made each day. At a recent meeting of personal documentary filmmakers from around the world, someone commented on how personal documentaries are now becoming so widely accepted that templates are available for those who want to attempt making one or for grant applications. And there now seems to be a cultural understanding of its place in the mediascape. You're listening to Synesthesia, which is produced live in the studio at Trent Radio 92.7 CFFFF FM in beautiful Nagajiwinang, Peterborough, Ontario, every Thursday at 5 p.m. It's also a podcast on Soundproof, creative nonfiction for audio. I'm your producer and host, L.A. Alfonso, in this audio program, Film Theory Meets Film Music. That was from the Mission soundtrack by Ennio Morricone. Did you know that in this article that I read, 10 Things You Didn't Know About Johnny Depp and Winona Ryder's Relationship, their iconic four-year relationship from 1989 to 1993, they bonded over this soundtrack, Ennio Morricone's The Mission soundtrack. And this soundtrack is part of the reason they fell in love. And I just wanted to play you the first track called On Earth As It Is in Heaven. And I may be playing more tracks from this soundtrack. I wanted to mention about the significance of this research, because I am really wondering if we're undergoing a notable present day sea change in the 2020s with the widespread adoption of the personal voice, especially in documentary productions. I have been observing the trends towards personalization since I felt personally invested in the genre long ago when screening Chris Marker's Sans Soleil changed my life all the way back in the late 80s. Recent scholarship has focused on the personal voice in cinema. Authors like Laura Rascaroli, Elisa LeBeau, and Michelle Renov have written extensively about the self and subjectivity in the first-person documentary and essay film. In the book Memory, Place, and Autobiography, Jill Daniels proposes that the filmmaker, in her dual role as a maker and subject, may act as a cultural guide in exploring the social world. And her book charts the historical trajectory of the British independent filmmaking movement. Her work acts like a model to my take. However, Daniels could serve her information best as an essay film, since it concerns motion pictures. Audiovisual material and descriptions rely heavily on examples from her work, which are difficult to find on the internet. And so my project differs in that I utilize my filmmaking skills for this project. And I want to tell the story of cinematic movements visually through the lens of my development as a media artist, with my work as primary texts and entry points to a personal and cultural history of cinematic self-inscription. As scholar Laura Rascaroli writes, the essay film is cited at the intersection of documentary, art film, and avant-garde practices. When I began this research, I had yet to consider how these approaches informed each other. I noticed how these worked within me through my turns as a video artist, filmmaker, and poet/performer. I uncovered early connections to the work of silent film directors from the 1920s and performance artists from the 60s, which I had not read about before. Jim Lane writes, shortly after the release of David Holtzman's Diary, the U.S. documentary scene shifted to actual modes of autobiography inspired by the fictional prototype. The journal entry documentaries that followed its release, like Ed Pincus's Diaries 1971 to 1976 and Ross McElwee's Sherman's March, to name two of many, owe a debt to Jim McBride's groundbreaking experiment. Reading Jim Lane affirmed Holtzman as ground zero for the first-person film. Still, I have found since then earlier examples, from Stan Brakhage to Carly Schneeman, which in some ways set the stage for Jim McBride's experiment. And earlier still, in the work of Benjamin Christensen and Herbert Ponting in the 1920s. Nonetheless, today, Lane writes, the autobiographical voice in the documentary is more acknowledged as a viable position. Nonfiction filmmaking has undergone an aesthetic revolution over the past decade, which parallels the significant change in fiction filmmaking. From postmodernism and mumblecore to meta-modernism, I want to trace the flow of influence through its luminaries, aesthetics, and ideas about cinema through an audiovisual presentation. The feature documentary, Me Movie, Director's Notebook.
Thank you.
I approached the research with some burning questions in mind. What are the emotional and ethical and artistic challenges for filmmakers who turn the camera on themselves? How do first-person films work? What is behind the autobiographical urge? What are the edges of the frame? What particulars of the human face make us prefer FaceTime and watch TikTok creators talk directly at us? If we feel movies, how much of the film's effect is due to music? How do essay films work? How can we better understand the present by investigating the past to measure its possible impact on the future? Listening to Synesthesia, which is produced live in studio at Trent Radio 92.7 CFFFM in beautiful Nagajiwanong, Peterborough, Ontario, every Thursday at 5 p.m. It's also a podcast on Soundproof, creative nonfiction for audio. I'm your producer and host, L.A. Alfonso, in this audio program, Film Theory Meets Film Music, and we're listening to the soundtrack from The Mission. Thank you. We're listening to Aquifer. Support this local artist by going to his Bandcamp page, Aquifer, aquifer.bandcamp.com. For the complete list of tracks and media that I played on today's show, check the show notes. You're listening to Synesthesia. I'm your producer and host, L.A. Alfonso. I'll be back next week.